Today, the markets believe honest. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and problem news with a distinctively Australian flavour. So this is my weekly market review, and it was a short week in the US, thanks to Thanksgiving, happy holidays, and so US stock markets closed at 1 p.m. ET after Thursday's Thanksgiving holiday on Friday. And of course, trading was light. In fact, the volume on US exchanges was about 4.54 billion shares, compared with a typical 11.25 billion over a full session. It's such a low volume trading day, as most people are at home, that I never count Friday after Thanksgiving, said Ed Confrancisco, Chief Executive Officer of International Assets Advisory. Starting next week, investors will focus on retail sales, China's newest COVID outbreak, and the Federal Reserve's next steps, he said. So, the Dow Jones Industrial Average rose 0.45% to 34,347. The S&P 500 lost 0.03% to 4,026. And the NASDAQ Composite dropped 0.52% to 11,226. All three indices ended the Thanksgiving week with gains led by the Dow, which rose 1.78%. That said, the NASDAQ closed lower on Friday with pressure from Apple in a subdued holiday-shortened trading session for Wall Street as investors watched Black Friday sales and COVID-19 cases in China. Apple fell 2% on news of reduced iPhone shipments from a Foxconn plant in China in November as production was hit by COVID-related worker unrest. The session focused on retailers as Black Friday sales kicked off against the backdrop of stubbornly high inflation and cooling economic growth. Shoppers were expected to turn out in record numbers, though, to shop for Black Friday deals. But with inclement weather, crowds outside stores were thin on the traditionally busiest shopping day of the year. US retail stocks have become a barometer of consumer confidence as inflation bites. So it's worth noting that the S&P 500 Retail Index is down a little over 30%, while the S&P 500 has fallen just 15%. Shares of retailers Target, Macy's, and Best Buy were mixed, while the S&P Consumer Discretionary Index rose just slightly. Activision Blizzard plunged 4.07% on a media report that the US Federal Trade Commission was likely to file an antitrust lawsuit to block Microsoft's $69 billion takeover bid for the video game publisher. Wall Street's main indices have rallied strongly from their early October lows, with the S&P 500 up more than 15% on a boost from a better-than-expected earnings season and more recently on hopes of less aggressive interest rate hikes by the US Federal Reserve, despite what the Fed says. Analysts are now seeing a 71.1% chance that the Fed will increase its key benchmark rate by just 50 basis points in December, with rates peaking in June 2023. The minutes of the Fed's November meeting show that a growing number of members supported a slower pace of rate hikes in order to gauge the economic impact of tightening monetary policy. But note, it's still rates going higher, just more slowly. Global stock and currency markets are still reveling in the Fed's downshift signal, despite the Fed minutes consistent with the path laid out in September, when the Fed said that it was on the glide path with 75, 50, and 25 basis points over the subsequent three meetings. There's no reason to assume the Fed's outlook has changed other than they've moved off jumbo rate hikes, but that will still top out rates at around 5%. So we think investors should be more concerned by the warnings from Fed economists and the warning signal outlooks from other central banks, New Zealand, for example. Recession is coming. It's likely to last for some time, and that's the price to be paid for getting inflation back down. The yield on the US 10-year note stood at 3.691%. while the two-year was at 4.467, still signalling a recession. The dollar index was up a little to 106.06, well down from recent highs of 114. Next week, the focus will be on US policymakers and October's jobs report. TD Securities said Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell and New York Fed President John Williams will headline the week with Fed speak specials. Both will make clear that a tight labour market and elevated services inflation necessitates the Fed to keep on hiking and likely for longer. As markets welcome the prospect of smaller hikes, we expect them to counter that by emphasising the need to reach an appropriately higher terminal rate. As for the US labour market, TD says it expects the pace of hiring to slow, but only gradually. So TD expects 240,000 new jobs were added last month versus a consensus expectation of around 200,000. European stock markets traded largely unchanged on Friday in thin trading conditions as investors digested German growth and consumer confidence data, and of course there was no US lead. The DAX index in Germany traded 0.1% lower, the CAC 40 in France was just slightly higher, while the FTSE in London was just up a tad. Europe's Stoxx 600 index closed at a fresh three-month high. Germany's economy grew by a shade more than initially thought in the third quarter, according to data released on Friday, as gross domestic product expanded by 0.4% rather than the 0.3% reported in its first reading. On an annual basis, the GDP number grew 1.2% in the third quarter. That's still a sharp slowdown from the 1.7% growth seen in the same quarter a year ago, when Europe's largest economy still had momentum from its post-pandemic reopening. The forward-looking GfK Consumer Climate Index for Germany also showed some signs of improvement for the second straight month, climbing to minus 40.2, but still close to its all-time low. The ECB has increased rates by a record 75 basis points in its last two meetings as it tries to tackle Eurozone inflation, which is running in double digits. Some are thinking they may slow ahead, but the signals still are pretty mixed. Crude oil prices slid on Friday with Brent crude down 1.68% and WTI down 1.78% amid thin liquidity and also helped by a weaker US dollar, which makes the commodity cheaper for foreign buyers. But crude markets posted a third consecutive losing week as surging COVID-19 cases in China have prompted the world's largest oil importer to reintroduce strict lockdown measures in several major cities, hitting economic activity and thus the demand for crude. European Union and G7 officials are also reportedly discussing a cap on Russian seaborne oil at $65 to $70 a barrel, a higher range than expected, dispelling fears that Moscow will slash oil exports to prevent selling at a loss. Additionally, gold futures rose 0.54% to $1,755 an ounce, while the Euro-US dollar traded flat at 1.0402. Now, most Asian markets fell slightly on Friday amid concerns over rising COVID cases in China, but were headed for weekly gains as dovish signals from the Federal Reserve minutes boosted broader appetite for risk-driven assets. Hong Kong's Hang Seng Index was among the worst performers for the day, losing 0.49%, and Chinese stocks rose on Friday, but still with mild weekly losses as the country got bogged down by the rising cases. They logged a record high rise in infections, with the country introducing new lockdowns in several major cities and also sparked some civil unrest in iPhone City, which plays a key role in the technology supply chain. China's daily COVID infections broke through 30,000 for the first time ever, according to recent statistics, as officials struggle to contain outbreaks that have triggered a growing number of restrictions across most of its important cities. The capital, Beijing, saw daily infections exceed 1,800, with a record tally and lockdown-like restrictions sparking panic buying in parts of the capital. China's central bank cut the amount of cash lenders must hold in reserve for the second time this year, ramping up support for an economy racked by surging COVID cases and a continued property downturn. The People's Bank of China reduced the reserve requirement ratio, the RRR, for most banks by 25 basis points, it said in a statement on Friday. The adjustment takes effect on December the 5th and will inject around 500 billion yuan, or 70 billion US dollars, of liquidity into the economy. The cut is aimed at keeping liquidity reasonably ample, they said, and increasing the support for the real economy, as well as helping banks support industries damaged by the COVID pandemic, the PBOC said in a separate statement. The RRR reduction, the first since April, was foreshadowed earlier in the week by the State Council, China's cabinet, which called for more efforts to solidify the economic recovery. The central bank has also cut its key interest rate twice this year, with the most recent move in August. The policy easing is in sharp contrast to the US Federal Reserve and other major central banks, which have hiked interest rates this year to combat soaring inflation. Federal officials recently signaled that they can slow down their aggressive interest rate hikes going forward, giving the yuan some respite after its sharp depreciation. The RRR is a way to free up cheap long-term liquidity for banks, allowing them to extend more loans to businesses and consumers, and it's going to save around 5.6 billion yuan in funding costs each year for financial institutions eligible to benefit from the cut. According to the PBOC, just don't mention the risks. The move will moderately lower the funding costs for commercial lenders and encourage credit extension so as to bring down the borrowing costs by companies and consumers, said Bruce Pang, chief economist and head of research for Greater China at Jones Lang LaSalle. The additional liquidity for banks will help reduce their liability costs, which may push them to drop the five-year loan prime rate, a reference rate for mortgage rates, according to Ming Ming, chief economist at CITIC Securities. While economists have been expecting more stimulus from the PBOC, the timing was a surprise after recent cautious statements from the central bank warning of possible inflation risks. In Friday's statement, the PBOC reintroduced a phrase to use quantitative and structural functions of monetary policy tools, which it had dropped earlier in its reports. The PBOC's move comes after significant government actions recently to help the economy as well, including a rescue package for the property sector and an adjustment of some COVID curbs to reduce the damage to the economy. China's central bank will offer cheap loans to financial firms for buying bonds issued by property developers. That's the strongest policy support yet for the crisis-hit sector. The PBOC hopes the loans will boost market sentiment towards the heavily indebted property sector, which has lurched from crisis to crisis over the past year, and rescue a number of private developers. China has stepped up support in recent weeks for the property sector, a pillar accounting for a quarter of the world's second biggest economy. Many developers defaulted on their debt obligations and were forced to halt construction. The country's biggest banks this week pledged at least $162 billion in credit to developers, and the PBOC loans through its relending facility are expected to be at much lower than the benchmark interest rate and would be implemented in the coming weeks, giving financial institutions more incentives to invest in private developers' onshore bonds. The PBOC is also drafting a white list of good quality and systemically important developers that would receive wider support from Beijing to improve their balance sheets. At least three private developers, including Longfor Group Holdings, Midea Real Estate, and Seizing Holdings, received the green light this month to raise a total of 50 billion yuan, or $7 billion, in debt. If there were not enough demand from investors for such new bonds, the PBOC would likely step in to provide liquidity via the relending facility for the rest of the issuance. Hong Kong's Hang Seng Mainland Property Index was up by as much as 4.7% on Friday, adding 1 percentage point after Reuters reported the PBOC moves. China's top developer by sales, Country Garden, was up 10%, CIFI Holdings was up more than 5%, and Longfor nearly 4%. Relending is a targeted policy tool the PBOC typically uses to make low-cost loans to banks to support the slowing economy, as the central bank faces limited room to cut interest rates on concerns about capital flight. The PBOC in recent months has used the relending facility to support sectors including transport, logistics, and tech innovation that were hard hit by the COVID-19 pandemic or are favoured by long-term state policies. Beijing's aggressive support for the property sector marks a significant reversal from a crackdown which began in 2020 on speculators and indebted developers in a broad push to reduce financial risks. As a result of the crackdown, though, Property sales and prices fell, developers defaulted on bonds and suspended construction. The construction halts have angered homeowners who have threatened to stop mortgage payments. The PBOC also plans to provide about 100 billion yuan, or 14 billion US dollars, in M&A financing facilities to state-owned asset managers, mainly for their acquisition of real estate projects from troubled developers. Chinese media had reported on Monday that the central bank planned to provide 200 billion yuan in interest-free re-lending loans to commercial banks through to the end of March for housing completions. Among other recent official support, China's interbank bond market regulator said this month that it would widen a program to support about 250 billion yuan, or 35 billion US dollars, of debt offerings by private firms. Much of Beijing's previous support targeted state-owned developers. Yi Haiman, chairman of China's securities regulator, said on Monday that the country must implement plans to improve the balance sheets of, quote, good quality developers. Is that an oxymoron, I ask myself. Fitch Ratings said on Thursday that private Chinese developers face higher liquidity risks in terms of debt structure, with greater short-term maturity pressure than state-owned peers as banks and other creditors are becoming reluctant to lend. Despite Friday's gains, the Chinese market continues to underperform their regional peers as investors feared that the renewed lockdown measures in China once again hamper economic growth. November's PMI readings due next week are set to shine more light on China's economy, with data from October already painting a dour picture for the fourth quarter. The yuan was at 7.1764 against the US dollar. However, the growth outlook remains challenging. David Kwu, economist, said a recovery in the housing market will likely be slow. While COVID cases have surged to a record high, spurring major cities like Beijing to restrict residents' movements, economists say China will likely face a slow and painful process of attempting to reopen the country, with Numera Holdings this week cutting its 2023 economic growth forecast to 4%. With COVID flare-ups proliferating, prompting renewed restrictions on activity and global growth slowing, it won't be easy for the economy. Given that outlook, we expect the PBOC to maintain a stance of gradual easing into 2023. Looking ahead to next year, we expect the PBOC to trim the RRR by another 50 basis points. It may also cut its one-year medium-term lending facility rate, a key policy interest rate, by 20 basis points. And we think that it would do that in two moves, with the first 10 basis point cut in the first quarter of next year. Japan's Nikkei 225 index fell 0.35% as rising inflation in the country's capital heralded more economic headwinds for the country, though it was still stronger across the week. Buoyed by strength in technology stocks, after the Federal Reserve signaled that it was considering rising interest rates at a slower pace, Tokyo CPI beat expectations for November across different measures of inflation, with headlines rising 3.8% year over year from 3.5% in October. The consensus, by the way, was 3.6%. That's the highest since 1982. The Kurita-led Bank of Japan has been highly reluctant to tighten monetary policy because weaker projected activity through 2023 will lean against inflation. However, persistent core inflation into the end of Kuroda's term in April 2023 would give the incoming governor scope to raise the upper bound of the yield curve control target. The central bank has also been vindicated in its hold-on stance to a significant degree by broad-based US dollar weakness that has driven the US dollar yen downside. The yen was 139.12 against the weaker US dollar. Now, in Australia, investors sought safety in blue-chip bank stocks on Friday, propelling Australia's largest bank to a 52-week high as central banks continue to tighten interest rates. Uncertainty about a global recession remains high and geopolitical risks persist. Commonwealth Bank, though, gained 1.1% to close just shy of its 2021 record high of $110. And shares in Westpac, NAB and ANZ were all higher, adding between 0.5% and 0.8%. Atlas Funds Management's Hugh Dive said the big banks were rising on higher than expected profitability due to expanding net interest margins and low bad debts. Well, that's, of course, because they're not passing the deposit rate increases they should be through to savers. And he added that Commonwealth Bank was also being lifted by an invisible hand pushing ahead with its own on-market share buyback. Of course, that's partly funded by money lodged with the RBA from the Term Funding Facility, which, of course, we are all paying for because that was lent at 0.25% and 0.1% from the RBA to the banks. The banks are likely to do quite well in this environment, particularly while unemployment is low, as it results in lower bad debts and net interest margins expanding as interest rates rise, he said. They're yielding well and far superior to their term deposits. Tier 1 capital ratios are far better today than they were in 2008, and there are less shaky loans to poor corporates, he said. Gains were not just limited to the Big Four, with Virgin Money UK rocketing 20% over the past week after profits soared in the higher interest rate environment. And the Bank of Queensland was up 1.34% to $7.56, but Macquarie was flat at $177.95. The S&P ASX actually enjoyed four straight days of gains during the week, adding 0.2% on Friday to close the week at 7,259. That's the index's highest level since May. So it's nearly wiped out its one-year losses, down just 0.3% since this time last year. And the accumulation index, which includes all cash dividends reinvested, gained 2.5%. Russell Schesler, head of investment and capital markets at Van Eyck, said Australia was in a strong position and was more likely to have a soft landing backed by solid resource prices. But he warned that local investors wouldn't be immune from a US recession. If the US sneezes, then the world catches the flu. If the US goes into recession, it will affect global demand and energy prices, he said. Consumer discretionary stocks led local gains on Friday, while materials weighed. Lithium stocks declined across the board, led by Allkem, falling 8.6%. Most other sectors were higher. EML soared 22.6% on takeover hopes after shareholders ousted Chairman Peter Martin at the company's annual general meeting in Sydney on Friday. And retailer City Chic plunged 28.4% after Chief Executive Phil Ryan warned of margin contraction in an address to shareholders on Friday. The local currency slipped 0.18% to 67.51. And finally, the crypto winter remains, with Bitcoin sitting at 16,521 and Ethereum at 1,199, as an eerie calm has continued on the crypto markets. Yet, popular commentator Il Capo of Crypto suggested that it was only a matter of time before the downside resumed on both high timeframes, the HTF, and low timeframes, the LTF. The picture looked bleak. HTF, lower lows and lower highs after breaking a monthly redistribution range below June's low and at supply zone. LTF, weak trend caused by a short squeeze, the bull trap, volume dying, he summarized to Twitter followers. As Cointelegraph reported, multiple Bitcoin price forecasts continue to call for a sub 14,000 US bear market bottom. And replying to Il Capo of Crypto, meanwhile, fellow analyst Gert von Langen offered a potential upside resistance support flip at 18,100 US as a bullish cue. Bitcoin US dollar rising from current levels to hold there, he wrote, would make the recent two-year low of $15,480, a triple bottom for 2022. It qualifies, though, only if 18,100 gets broken, he stressed. And within crypto circles, the fate of Digital Currency Group, DCG, its subsidiary Grayscale, and the Grayscale Bitcoin Trust, the GBTC, continue to constitute a major talking point. One of the largest contributions came from Bloomberg Intelligence exchange-traded ETF analyst James Seyfried, who in a dedicated Twitter thread said that despite market nerves, voluntary liquidation of the $10.5 billion GBTC was quote unlikely. That just doesn't seem like it's on the table to me, he wrote. Acknowledging frustration at the fund's discount to the Bitcoin spot price, he concluded that ultimately given the material availability, there was a 99.9% chance that it held the BTC it claimed via custodian Coinbase. The GBTC spot price discount was 39.2% as of November the 24th. So here we have the very interesting situation where the markets are getting quite bullish. Fed is easing back and nothing much to see at the moment with regard to COVID in China maybe. But again, you've got to ask the question, are they being too optimistic? And when the Fed continues to lift those rates and continues to drive the US economy towards recession, what will happen then? And I will leave you with this thought, that in New Zealand this week, Adrian Orr, when he lifted rates by 0.75% in one sitting, that's the largest ever, signaled that a recession was on the cards, a necessary recession to get inflation under control. Which then begs the question, are we so different? Well, see my earlier post. My argument is we are probably less different than the RBA would like to see. Or in other words, these exalted heights that we're seeing in the market still may turn turtle sometime soon. We'll watch and wait. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.